Welcome to the R.M. Williams Outback Podcast. I'm Terry Cowley, the Senior Associate Editor of R.M. Williams Outback Magazine. Thanks to Elders Insurance for sponsoring this podcast. Merchandise and a social media presence are keeping the Dishon Goat Depot afloat in a challenging market. To share with us the slightly madcap world of the Dishon Goat Depot, I'm joined by Simon, better known as Sigo Dishon, one of the key members of Dishon family who makes it all happen. Hi there, Sigo.
Hi, Terry. Great to be with you.
I should have asked you if I should call you Sigo, or will we stick with the more formal Simon?
No, I answered as Sigo, and I definitely urge friend. Terry, you're now in the friend. So no, Sigo's fine.
Thank you. Well, you know, I think the name kind of suits what we're going to talk about. So you grew up near Lightning Ridge, and your family has a business drafting goats and cropping. Tell me a bit about the family business, what they do and where they do it.
That's right. The goats is a real, I mean, in the lifetime of the farm at Lightning Ridge at Lanillo is where the goat depot is situated. Third or almost fourth generation out there now with the boys coming along. It's traditionally sheep and wool producing, moved into cattle, and then of recent time, in the last 10 years, the goats have always existed out there from earliest memories. There's always been goats getting in amongst the sheep. We'd go and round up the sheep, and there'd always be the odd goat with an identity crisis in amongst the sheep coming in for shearing. And otherwise, it's sort of like, oh, let's remove the goat, you know, ha-ha, let them go back to the wild. But then, of course, there's some country around the farm and in that region where it's particularly thick and scrubby land where, it was quite difficult to get vehicles into, and it was almost horseback or walk in and out. Motorbikes were, it was almost too thick to get into. And then that's where the goats sort of bred up, and the fencing out there, obviously, 10, 20, 30 years ago, the fencing, the goats were amazing at getting through fences. And so they sort of existed and bred up and moved between properties. They certainly didn't have a home, if you like. They'd sort of moved to where, and they always looked amazing, these goats. And apart from every now and then, we might get an eclectic visitor that would come and, ask permission to butcher a goat, and we'd often look at them oddly, thinking, they've got this lovely mutton and lamb here, and this person's out there eating this delicious goat meat. And then, of course, that's right. So then the goats sort of came under the crosshairs of my brother Nick. He sort of noticed there was a market, and it's I remember 20 years ago we would attempt to round them up and try and catch them, and we'd have a hell of a time. It was a lot of fun and a lot of high speed and almost chasing them, but we'd often get very excited because there'd be large numbers. But often we'd get, by the time we got them to the yard, they were such incredible athletic things, almost like deer, that they wouldn't respect the motorbike, they wouldn't respect fences. So we'd often arrive back at the yards with a hatful of goats. And so then Nick then started to improve gradually over time the almost goat-proofing parts of the farm. So that's where the depot, I guess, spawned, one paddock at a time, if you like. And he converted the older shearing sheds at one end of the farm into a goat processing or goat yards, if you like. So, heightened the fences, buried some fencing into the earth as well so they couldn't go under, they couldn't go over. So I guess that was it. It was a very gradual improvement, if you like. And then, of course, and then Nick was doing some research into maybe motorized isn't the most effective way of capturing the goats, and there are other methods, of course, with how to get large numbers with minimum effort. And that's, I think there was a water trap that Nick employed, which was, essentially they'd come into water and they could enter and not leave, sort of thing, around these dams in the goat area. I think that was, that started to get really exciting because you'd crest the bank of the dam and there'd be, lots and lots of colours and smelly and hairy goats all captured. I think that definitely did excite Nick and see this is a, yeah, this is definitely something that, look at these numbers. The numbers were astonishing. I mean, the goats that were breeding in the wild, moving from farm to farm, and the speed of how their numbers would build was absolutely astonishing. I remember that, thinking the season's terrible, you know, when there was no, you know, there was no grass, it was often quite a bad season, and yet the goats looked amazing and the numbers were getting, they were swelling, you know, they're actually doing really well. Don't know what they're eating exactly, but that's sort of the gradual how it came around, seeing them and then slowly working out a way of, yeah, capturing them and working them in the yards. So then, yeah, and then fast forward to, you know, 20, 25 years later, through sort of spreading the word and promoting his what Nick does there, he's got three boys now who have all finished school, and they're sort of at an age where they're looking to get their teeth into things. So the promotion in the area, Nick's able to take in goats from the region, so people that don't have these special fences and they don't have these special yards, and but they do have a vehicle and they do have a way of capturing the goats. So they'll then pop the goats in their vehicles and drop them off at Nick's depot, if you like, and Nick can hold on to them and build numbers. And I remember that, you know, sort of being amazed that Nick could get a call saying, "Oh, hi Nick, yeah, I've got a goat, or I've got goats for you. Can I drop them off?" And Nick will discuss on the phone and work out a price. And then he'll go down the road and I'll jump in with him and go down the road to meet often a sedan, you know, or a hatchback car with a goat on the back seat. Nick could then release the goat in with the mob. So, yeah, and I think promotion part, you know, because often people would come along and they'd want to meet Nick, and you know, goats were exciting and they were and new and different. So they'd often say, "Oh, you know, I went out to see Nick," or "How do I get in contact with Nick?" or "Who's taking goats? Who's paying for goats?" etc. I was in England at the time, and Nick said to me, "Listen, let's look at something I can give the drivers, or I can give the people that are dropping goats off, you know, something to take away from the farm."
Before we get on to your role, I just wanted to ask you a bit about growing up. So, Sigo, you were the youngest of five boys by 4 years. What was it like growing up out there?
Oh, yes. That's a really good question. I was the youngest of five brothers, that's right. And I have absolutely fond memories of the lifestyle out there and growing up there. I think what hit home was how special I had it was we would travel on the bus into the primary school into Lightning Ridge. It was a 38, about 40-minute drive on the bus on a gravel road, and interact with the friends at primary school. And I was allowed to have friends home on my last year in primary school. So when I was in year six, I was like, "Oh, Simon, it's your time to have your friends home from school." So I'd invite my town friends home to the farm. Yeah, and I just remember we'd get out at the farm. I remember looking around at these guys, and they just couldn't get over the, "There's motorbikes over there, there's horses over there, there's, you know, there's chickens, there's pigs." I remember them just being overwhelmed, these guys, of looking around at something I'd grown up with. And I remember thinking, you know, that was pretty special, you know, having all those opportunities and, you know, driving vehicles and, I don't know, taking on responsibilities and things like that as well. Often the parents are away, or and also I want to add as well, Terry, that the town of Lightning Ridge as well was just it's such an interesting place. And school friends were in primary school were an incredible mix. You know, I think Lightning Ridge, it attracts a certain dynamic. There's, of course, the opals, you know, there's the healing qualities of the artesian water, you know, and there's people that just want to get away from it all as well. So there was people from all over the world who were my classmates at Lightning Ridge, and really fond memories of growing up out there.
So a really interesting upbringing.
Get into a new Ram today. It's America's best truck brand 5 years running, according to US News & World Report. With unrivaled Hemi V8 power, you'll understand why Ram is dominating the competition year after year. And with Australia's best range of full-size pickup trucks, Ram eats everything else for breakfast. See your Ram dealer or visit ramtrucks.com.au and get into America's best truck brand today. Ram, enough said.
But you weren't really hands-on at the farm so much as your brothers when you were growing up. You had interests elsewhere.
Absolutely. And I think I was encouraged as well by mum and dad, just because, well, mum would say as well that I was supposed to be the girl, and she even had a name picked out for me. So they just dropped the E off Simone.
Really?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I was supposed to be Simone.
Wow. Well, I'm Terry, so what, my parents didn't even bother.
So that's right. So coming along with a, you know, 4-year gap after four boys, who were all the four boys were my brothers, were incredibly physical, incredibly, you know, adept at stock work and machinery and working the plant and all those things. And they knew how to farm, run the farm back to front. So no one was clamoring to jump in with mum and do the grocery shopping, which I actually quite liked. I had a good relationship with the news agent in town, the Barneses, and they'd save comics and they'd put aside all the magazines for me, so I'd come and collect them. Yeah, mum and dad actually encouraged that. So, you know, I think that probably fed into my interest in art and creation of graphics and narrative storytelling and that sort of thing.
And you probably couldn't have imagined that would come in so handy. The figures I have here, the depot has processed up to 10,000 goats in a busy year and averages 3,000 to 4,000. And a couple of years ago, goat prices were really peaking. Then, despite a run of 3 good seasons, the market slumped. And I guess those skills that you've been talking about, you were able to apply them to the family business. Tell me all about that.
Yeah, great question, Terry. I was forever sort of keeping in contact with the farm, coming back to the farm, bringing my children to the farm, and and seeing how the farm has expanded and how it's improving. And I think what was really exciting for me was seeing the new generation growing up. So Nick's boys, all the cousins, nieces and nephews growing up, the other boys, Ben and Sam's children all growing up, that there was this network already, a network of that generation of people. And they were always saying, I noticed one of the truck drivers had on a run of terrible trucker hats, I think, initially, which fell apart as soon as you put them on. That was sort of like what we were giving out free to drivers, and a couple of runs of stickers, which also were terrible. And so that when the nieces and nephews all found out about it, so I saw someone with a goat depot hat on. And yeah, and then we started thinking about, well, you know, what do you guys want? So we started to do a little test audience of what that generation wanted, you know, and T-shirts came up, rugby shorts were discussed. What else did we have? We had fishing shirts, stubby coolers. We had flip-flops, tea towels. I think hoodies. Yeah, hoodies was one of the first as well. So trucker hats, hoodies, and because they were quite in fashion. So that was it. So then I was able to get involved in the farm again. You know, it was from working in the creative industry in film and graphic design and communication. I was able to sort of look and help and contribute and get the communication up. And of course, that generation were all on social media, so they could give me votes. We almost had a sort of a chat room where I'd send an idea over and they'd thumbs up or thumbs down. So, yeah, it certainly wasn't just sort of putting together a concept and just launching it. It was always go through the committee, if you like. So it was a really nice, yeah, it still is, a really nice way of keeping contact and seeing what they like. And, of course, as that generation get older, their tastes change, and so hence we've got a bit of more mature a tote bag, if you like, for your shopping, and so things are sort of changing slightly in the taste. But at the heart of it, yeah, it's listening to those guys and seeing what they like, and they're really good because it's family. They don't mix their words. They'll tell you honestly if something's not right. So there's been a lot of launches that have been pulled and, you know, that's not working or that's embarrassing, take that down. So I often use photos, and you can see on the shop there, there's actual photos of family members on some of the merchandise, you know, and so some of it's like, oh, that's embarrassing, take it down. Or
it's your job, isn't it, as the annoying younger brother to embarrass them all?
That's right.
We're not talking about, you know, giving away hats anymore. You're talking about proper paid merchandise and shops and things, something that can actually have the potential to contribute significantly to the bottom line of the business.
100%. Yeah. Nick's always been an advocate for contributing to the community. You'll see the Deschenes Goat Depot marketing or logos. It'll appear in the Lightning Ridge Rodeo, the Walgett Races, the Rugby Club. The next one coming up is the Lightning Ridge Races. The Deschenes Goat Depot sponsor Shoot One of the Rodeo. So they all get banners that hang off the Rodeo. There's opportunities there to sell merchandise at Goat Depot merchandise at the, and that's a sort of, there's no actual store as such, so there's no sort of footfall coming through a shop window. It's all online, so it's nice to have that actual face-to-face with potential customers at an event like that. One of the successful campaigns we were doing was competition, so guessing the number of goats or guessing the weight of the goat.
I guess what you're talking about is that connection, aren't you?
100%. 100%.
And keeping the brand out there.
Yes. And actually, Terry, that's a really good point because you've just triggered a memory. What does sell is a customer or someone spotted with a hat on or a piece of merchandise, them photographing themselves and they'll direct message the Instagram, so they'll direct message me and say, you know, and there's actually a hand gesture, a horns up hands gesture that they'll do. They'll have the cap on or the fishing shirt. And so I'll take the photo, I might put a message with it, or I'll just bring out, tidy it up a little bit, the photo, and put that up on the Instagram. So it's those customer or who spotted the merch, or, you know, where has it been spotted? You know, it's been, and there is, there's photos as far away as Glasgow, Bali, USA, as well as all around Australia of customers just with the merch on, sending it in saying, put this on the post, I want to be seen on the post, you know. And that photo is what, yeah, that's probably what sells the most, actually, when you see children with hats on and things like that. I think that's a really powerful connection.
So horns up, I guess the saying, and describe the hand gesture for people who haven't seen it. It's not rude. It's not rude.
No, not at all. Not at all. And if I'm describing it, essentially, it's raising your pinky finger and your pointer finger to the sky and bringing your thumb up and holding the two middle fingers down behind the thumb. Now, the big thing is to make sure you face palm out so the thumb is facing towards the person you're giving horns up to, because if you flip it, I believe that's a sign of the devil. So it's polite. It's polite to show them the face of the goat, which is the thumb. Are you trying it?
So I'm doing it now. So it looks like it's, yeah, I'm doing it now. I didn't realize it was so involved. So thank you for that little rundown there. So it's a goat. It's a goat head, right?
It's a goat head. That's right. So the thumb is the snout. And then the eyebrows are your two middle fingers, and then you've got your horns, little finger and pointer finger.
Look, I mean, you know, this might rival the R.M. Williams Longhorn one day. You never know.
I don't know about that, but it's hilarious. But I do get a lot of enjoyment of scrolling through the Instagram and seeing the variations on it. It's fantastic.
Actually, I think R.M. Williams needs to come up with a sort of a longhorn hand symbol, definitely.
Oh, 100%.
So we are joking, but how important do you think it is for farms and bush businesses generally to tell their stories and get out there via social media?
Oh, yeah, great question, Terry. I think, I mean, yeah, it's one of those things is that 30, 40 years ago, my memories of when we'd go on holiday from the farm is we couldn't wait to get to the coast, or we couldn't wait to get to the cities because we could buy, you know, back then to get half decent caps and T-shirts, those surfy T-shirts that you had, there was really nice graphics. And, you know, I used to love getting to the centres where you could get those things. It wasn't a great deal. I love the fact that we're able to, you know, to get our story, to get our, you know, the look and feel of the work and the ethics that the boys put into the farm, into merch. It's actually quality. It's actually something that people want to wear. When I see someone wearing one of the caps or a sticker on the back of a vehicle, or it has a, I don't know, it's like a, yeah, there is, it's a community. You feel like you feel like you're part of something, and it makes it like a really shareable medium, if you like. People are sort of interested in the quirkiness of what, you know, what it's like out there, the lifestyle out there, you know, and they're sort of investing in that. They almost sort of respond to it. It's, yeah, it's brilliant, Terry. Your question is a great question, because I just think that all those unique and quite isolated, you know, lifestyles out there can feel part of something bigger, if you like, and share it with people. It's fascinating. It's fascinating seeing how people exist and how they, you know, their day-to-day life, which might seem like, yeah, we've been doing this all our lives, but when people get a glimpse at that through these social media platforms, it's really fascinating, especially for people in Europe or you know, outside of Australia as well, to look at that. You know, they see this goat lifestyle and think, wow, really? You chase them on motorbikes? You know, they're sort of a, yeah, I think it's extremely important.
You're making agriculture seem exciting, which, you know, if that attracts more young people, can only be a good thing.
100%. Yeah, 100%. Agriculture now is, I'm looking at it from a image making skills or graphic design skills or narrative storytelling skills, looking at the environment out there, looking at the upbringing and the uniqueness and the quirkiness of it, and trying to visualize that, if you like, and trying to create something that allows more people in to that sort of lifestyle, I guess.
How are things going with the business now?
Numbers are up with goats. Nick's boys, Jack, Harry and Tom, they've each done a number of years up north in the territory. You got Nick the boss, and then you've got these three, and then Kath, of course, and it's just seeing how the dynamic of that, you know, the next sort of 5 years or next decade, and they're all deeply invested and passionate about Lanillo and the goat depot and how to just keep improving on all the good work.
To finish up talking about your merchandise, is it true that you've been thinking about some goat depot budgie smugglers? Is this true?
Absolutely. That is, yeah, I wish I could say that's made up, but no, that is absolutely true. We had a mock-up put together. What the scary thing is there's no shortage of models. They can't wait to get these things on. And I'm just terrified of what they'll look like and where they, because they want a goat on it, obviously, and there's horns involved. So I'm just terrified of where those.
Yeah. That's a tricky one. Could go in a number of different directions.
It could. No, 100%. So my job is to have fun with the graphics, but also make it viable with suppliers and still be able to feed a bit of money back into the depot.
All sounds like good fun, and having fun's important, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
You've got to have fun.
Absolutely.
Sometimes. Keep the fun in farming.
Put the fun in farming. That's good. That's good. You only got to scroll down the Instagram, and I've just been doing this while we speak, Terry. And yeah, there is fun. That's a good word, because there are people there with smiles on their faces, and they're from all walks of life.
Well, well done on the work that you've done, and I wish you and the family business all the best for the future. And I guess horns up.
Terry, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much. Absolutely delighted to be part of it.
Thank you for your time, Siggo. This interview was based on a story by Mandy McKeesick on the Deschon Goat Depot, which appears in issue 153 of Outback Magazine. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. Talk to you soon.
Now's the time to upgrade to a new Ram truck. With unrivaled Hemi V8 power and a max brake towing capacity of up to 4.5 tons. With quick delivery available right now, you can get behind the wheel of a new Ram faster than ever. Stocks are limited, so see your Ram dealer or visit ramtrucks.com.au today. Ram eats everything else for breakfast. Stock and delivery times vary by model and dealer.